Call the April 2nd meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. Good morning, members. Welcome to April. And we will start by opening a public hearing on HJR 31. And Mr. Stembridge, please tell us about HJR 31.
HJR 31 is a referral to the voters upon approval by the voters at the November 2008 general election. It changes the operative date of redistricting from September 1st or November 15th of the year redistricting plan is completed to the second Monday of January of the next odd-numbered year. It provides for the election of state senators and state representatives under the new redistricting plan in the election year immediately following the completion of the redistricting, but it allows persons who has resided in the district since only January 1st of the year following completion of reapportionment to be appointed state senator or state representative to the district during the full year following completion of reapportionment.
Thank you. And I see that we have Representative Hunt ready to talk to us. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. This is really largely a technical fix. I actually cannot figure out for the life of me how the process we have now ever got started. You know, we do redistricting every 10 years like most states do, like all states do, where we reapportion districts. It's a zero-sum game, obviously, for state legislative districts. We never gain or lose seats. It's just a matter of reapportioning them among the 60 House districts to ensure even population. The challenge comes in cases where two members end up in the same district, just based on redistricting. Now, the way that happens at the congressional level, because it does happen, is those two people could choose to run against each other, but whichever one, the district lines basically stay the same for the entire 2 years. In Oregon, we have a very strange dynamic where halfway through that term, in the most recent case, it was the term where folks were elected in 2000. Halfway through that term, the lines change, and you are assigned to a new district. So I think you'll hear from Representative Phil Barnhart later. Phil is a great example of this because he was elected to a district in Eugene in 2000, where he served for most of the year of 2001, and then on November 15th of 2001, he was assigned to a new district that was largely in Central Oregon for a year, and then he ran in 2002 and was assigned back to a district in Central Lane and Linn counties. So just over the course of those 2 years, he actually represented three different districts. The way this bill would form it is Representative Barnhart, for example, would be elected for 2 years, would serve those constituents in the old lines for 2 years, and then, if he chose to run and was elected, would then represent whatever the new district lines were for the next 2 years. That's the way it works at the congressional level. That's not the way it's worked in Oregon for whatever reason. So we have a whole series of odd pairings that have happened. Another example, in Clackamas County, Representative Carolyn Tomei, who represented a district in Milwaukee, all of a sudden was assigned to a district in Lake Oswego for a year and then was re-elected back to a district in Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. So we've got a very strange dynamic. It is not the way we do congressional districts. All of our members of Congress are elected for 2 years, even in a reapportionment year. They serve the full 2 years. And then if they are elected again, they then begin their new term in their new districts at the beginning of the next year. This bill would reinstate that same principle for state legislative races, that the new lines would not take effect until the beginning of the next legislative session. It's kind of a fundamental fix by changing the date that the reapportionment plans take effect to the first day of the next legislative session, and really allowing legislators to serve the full two-year terms, serving those constituents who elected them. It really is unfair both to the legislator and to the constituents to end up really being a match that's made by the Secretary of State, which may not be, it's kind of like a dating game where they end up and they may not be a match made in heaven between those pairings that are made. This allows constituents who choose a legislator to be matched with those legislators for the full 2 years, and then an opportunity to choose afresh for the new term.
Thank you. And to clarify, this would require a vote of the people, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
But it that is would in happen in time for this to be effective before the next reapportionment?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Great. And I see that Representative Barnhart has joined us. Would you like to come forward? We are discussing House Joint Resolution 31, which Representative Hunt has been telling us about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart, State Representative from House District 11, formerly House District 55, formerly House District 40. And the story I have to tell you this morning is a kind of an interesting one. Under the current rules, and given that the legislature was unable to act on redistricting in the last go-around, the Secretary of State established the redistricting with the essential overview of the Supreme Court. The result of that was that redistricting took effect, I believe, in December of 2001. And I suddenly was booted out of my South Eugene seat and became the representative from District 55, which, as you know, is currently held by George Gilman. I represented a district beginning at the Willamette Pass, about 70 miles from my house, and continuing east into Lake County, north to Crook, and so forth. I'm not certain exactly where the boundaries of District 55 are. The reason for that was the formula that the it was all perfectly legal. The formula that was followed by the Secretary of State required that when there was more than one representative living in a new district, that the second one, the odd representative, had to be assigned to another district. And he followed the rules exactly for how that was done. The result was that most of my relatively liberal South Eugene seat became represented by Cedric Hayden, a Republican, who happened to live on the edge of that district at that time. And the district I was currently living in was represented by Al King, who also lived in District 11. The next closest district that was vacant, in fact, the only one left in the state after he went through the process, was District 55. You might imagine that it was a very interesting time between my response and the response of the editorial boards of the various newspapers in District 55. I did have a great time that year. I was elected in District 40, South Eugene, probably one of the more liberal districts in the state, and represented one of the more conservative ones for most of the term. And I had a great time because I did get over several times into the district. I learned something about the problems of small schools. In Paisley, for example, I termed myself for all the special sessions in 02 as the representative from Paisley. I thought the legislature enjoyed that little joke. But if we can come up with a system that will do a better job of allowing representatives to represent the people who are more like the ones that elected them, that would be an improvement. I have to tell you, there are nuances of this measure that I don't understand, and so I don't have a specific comment on House Joint Resolution 31. I think it's very important, for example, that whatever you do, figure out a way to maintain the residency requirements in the current law so that representatives who need to make short moves in order to stay in the districts that they want to represent can do that while maintaining their current seats. But unless those parts of this constitutional provision are changed, I think that's probably covered in the existing language. Other than that, a rule that simply says the new districts begin at the time of swearing in for the next session for the next regular session makes a great deal of sense, and I would commend it to you.
And Representative Barnhart, I don't think we would ever refer to you as the odd representative.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how you achieved that distinction.
Speak for yourself, Madam Chair.
Are there questions? Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Barnhart, I'm sure you represented every district that you were assigned to with great expertise. Representative Hunt, I was wondering in Section 8, Subsection B, lines 38 through 41. If you could explain to me, some page three, if you could explain to me if a representative such as Representative Barnhart is living in a specific district, if the lines get redrawn and say that the district kind of cuts into South Eugene, and Representative Barnhart would actually have to move, you know, four blocks over to get to still represent South Eugene. I'm not quite sure the timing of this residency requirement. Would he be able to make that move and then still represent his district?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, my understanding of it, and this may be a better question for Legislative Council, but my understanding is if, let's say, Representative Barnhart's district was changed so he only had, so there was an overlap. Half of the district, of his new district lines, overlapped with his old district lines. Mm-hmm. He would obviously be able to move into that overlapping portion in order to maintain residency to represent his old district and to maintain residency to represent his new district. That I think is a very logical intent. If he were actually running for a district completely outside of his old district, even as I'm reading the language, I am not clear. It would appear under this that he would be able to move in order to qualify to run in the new district, but then I believe under existing law he would then become ineligible to represent his old district. So, which I actually think is fair. I mean, if Representative Barnhart wants to run to represent a district over in Paisley, he should have that right to move to meet the new residency requirements, but in that case I don't think he should have the right to continue to represent his old district. So the intent of the way it's written is to say you would have to move, you could move into an overlapping portion of the district between your old district and your new, but if you were to move to a completely different district, you'd have to vacate your existing seat. That's the intent. Whether this actual language says that, it would be a great question for Legislative Council.
And we can clarify that. Yes,
and let me respond to that as well, if I may. Currently, there are residency requirements. I don't recall exactly what they are. I think it's a year.
It is 1 year.
That you have to live in the district. And I think that for sitting members, under the existing law, those are waived for reapportionment time. And so that a person who's currently in the legislature could move from the place he's living now into another place that would be within the district that he wants to represent. Maybe it is in an overlapping area, I'm not sure. But because the old districts simply disappear
right
at this point, and the new ones appear sort of by magic on a certain date, not related to elections at all, the current rule basically allows members to sort of move around because the residency requirement goes away for existing members for that period of time. I think that flexibility is probably valuable, and we ought to figure out a way to make sure that that continues. Now, having said that, I should tell you that I've lived in the same house since 1977. So the changes that we talked about did not apply to me in terms of moving.
And we do have some representatives of the Elections Division here with us, so they may be able to shed some light on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
As well. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to ask, did this experience, however, help you become a representative representing the whole state of Oregon as opposed to district?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, thank you. That's a great question. I think it did. The fact is that I would have had no occasion to go to Paisley and learn about a school district of 100 students struggling to make a go of it with almost twice as much money per student as South Eugene had. But having done that, looked at their budget, talked with the locals, which is something I probably wouldn't have done otherwise, I realized that that was in fact the case. They were struggling to make a go of it with almost twice as much money per student as South Eugene had. And I understand now better the rural education problem than I did before. So in that sense, absolutely, it did.
And Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I might say, I think there are lots of opportunities where we can all better visit each other's districts. I think the core principle here is that constituents should have the right to elect or not elect somebody for 2 years and then have the expectation that that person will serve them for 2 years and likewise, the legislator should have the knowledge that they will be assigned to that district that they to which they were elected for 2 years.
Other questions? Okay, thank you both very much for your testimony. And we will temporarily close the public hearing on HJR 31. And we will open a public hearing on HJR 33. And we'll call Representative Scott Brun. Good morning, and welcome to the Elections Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Do you want me to describe the bill? I'm more happy to do that.
Mr. Stenberg?
I can do that. It's a little bit of a lengthy description here on HJR 33. This is another referral upon approval by the voters at the May 2008 primary election. Amends the Oregon Constitution to require that redistricting for legislative districts and congressional districts be done by a three-member panel of retired court justices to be known as the Panel of Special Masters, selected by lot, from a list of 12 selected through each by the Speaker, House Minority Leader, Senate President, and Senate Minority Leader, from a list of 24 retired judges willing to be special masters selected by lot by the Oregon Supreme Court. It requires at least one of the three special masters to be from each major political party, requires the final redistricting plan unanimously adopted by the panel to be submitted for a vote of the people at the next following general election. If the plan fails at the election, it requires the appointment of a new panel of special masters to generate a new redistricting plan to be approved in the same manner.
Thank you. Representative Brun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Committee, for hearing House Joint Resolution 33 today. Jim did a great job, I think, of describing the bill. Let me go into a little bit more detail. And I think a point I want to make largely is that this is comprehensive redistricting and reapportionment reform. It is comprehensive, but I don't think it is very complex. That when you first hear it, it seems to be so. Once you've read through it once or twice, it actually, in my opinion at least, sort of simplifies the way we currently do it now. Once again, just to sort of put it in more layman's terms, what House Joint Resolution 33 would do upon approval of the people of Oregon would require the Supreme Court to establish this pool of retired judges. And basically, to be in this pool, to be eligible for this pool, you have to, one, be retired. You can never have held partisan elected office. So if it's a judge that at some point in his or her career had been a state legislator, they would not qualify. Nor would they qualify if they've changed their party registration during the time they were serving as judge or any time too. So it's somebody who's been a Democrat judge or Republican judge, registered at least their entire working career and has never held a partisan office. Once that pool of 24 judges is established, all four caucuses are then required to choose nominees. And by the four caucuses, I mean the Speaker's office, the Minority Leader's office, the Senate President's office, and the Senate Minority Leader's office are all required to nominate, if you will, three judges from this pool. The trick part of this, Will, I think it's a good part, is that the individual caucuses, when they nominate three judges from this pool, they cannot be of the same party. So, for example, the Democratic Speaker would need to nominate three retired Republican judges, and the Minority Leader of the House, the current Minority Leader of the House, would need to nominate three retired Democrat judges. So anyways, once this all happens, you've got 12 judges. At that point, you have to will it down to three judges that actually do the work, and the three judges are established by lot. So, and there has to be at least one Republican, one Democrat. There could be two Republicans, there could be two Democrats, but there has to be at least one of each. So that's how you get to that's sort of the layman's way of how you get to these three judges. Start with 24, will it down to 12. Based on the caucuses, and then by chance, honestly, you get to these three. I should say that any one of the when you have the 12 that are nominated by the four caucuses, any individual member of those caucuses can throw away one. So if you know, say the House, the Speaker's office sees a judge and they're like, you know, that guy's just not going to work or that gal's just not going to work for whatever reason, you can pull it out, and each caucus has the right to do that as well. Anyways, once we've established the three judges, then they go to work. And, Madam Chair, they basically have similar requirements that are at least talked about now as far as continuous communities, not splitting up a city if you don't have to, when you have to, keeping those splits of those cities to a minimum. Same thing with counties, not splitting up a county if you don't have to, when you do have to, try to minimize those splits of the counties. Anyways, they go through all the work. They establish their redistricting plan every 10 years, both legislative and congressional, and then it's in place. So following the next census that we have, obviously the 2010 census, in the 2002 election cycle, the plan that this body puts in place will be the plan that is voted on by the people, that individuals are voting on, individual congressional people, individual legislators will be planned. At the same election, there will be, and the language is right here, there will be a ballot measure that says, basically, does this plan that you're now voting on, do you want it to be permanent? And it has some language that says that. If yes, then great, and it'll stay that way until the next census. If not, that election stays true. So those people are elected the way they are. But it'll go back, a new pool will be established, and we'll start the process over again. So that's basically the parameters of how this works. Why do we do this? That's the question of the day. Why do we do this? Basically, this is political reform sort of in the nth degree. Madam Chair, we've done a lot of political reform this session. We'll probably do some more. I would argue, of course, I'm partial because I'm part of this bill, but I would argue that nothing that this legislature can do this session will have a bigger impact for the people of Oregon than HGR 33. And the crux of it is that none of what's accomplished in HGR 33 will benefit any of us. It won't benefit a single member of this committee. It certainly won't benefit me. It won't benefit a single person in this state who is a partisan elected office holder, either in the legislature or Congress. It only benefits the people of Oregon by making sure in their mind that redistricting and reapportionment is done in a fair, faithful, neutral, and objective way. We've all talked tongue-in-cheek about whether or not redistricting is done in that fashion now, and I don't think we've ever been in a point in the state where we haven't had that conversation where we sort of said, yeah, I wonder if it's fair, I wonder if it's not fair. I'm not here to impugn anybody or any reason. I do know that human nature is human nature, and we are all partisans, some more so than others. And if we're in a position that way, we human nature being human nature, we may err on the side of our party. I would probably do the same. This is to completely remove the question of whether or not there's been erring on the side of partisanship, if you will. It's to completely eliminate the question, so we don't have to have those tongue-in-cheek conversations. So we don't have to second guess. It's to completely remove that component. Like I said, it doesn't help any of us, but it's probably the right thing to do for Oregon, and that's what it is in a nutshell. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bruner, are there other states that use a process similar to what's proposed in this bill?
Not that I'm aware of, and in fact, similar legislation was proposed by the governor of California in early 2006, and so this is partially based on what they attempted to do in California. To my knowledge, certainly in recent years, and as I'm told, I could have been told incorrectly on this, but as I'm told, no legislative reform of this magnitude has ever been done by the legislature. There's been things there's not a similar system. There's been comprehensive redistricting done by the people, done by ballot measure before in various other states, but the legislature, as any legislature, has never imposed on itself something to the degree which we're looking at doing here. This is big. I mean, I don't mean to underestimate this. This is a very big, comprehensive thing, and I realize there's a lot of data, a lot of what ifs, a lot of change for people to get their arms around. But once again, I think this current legislature has sort of already marked itself as being one that is looking favorably toward reform, and I think this fits right on that path, Madam Chair.
Questions? Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to at least ask one question of
a
good representative. Actually, I have two. Representative, when looking at this and defining it down to judges who are members of both major political parties, how do minor political parties come into play?
They would be fine. What the bill says is that no more... It could be it could be 12 Republicans and 12 Democrats within this original pool of 24, and that would be permissible under this bill. It couldn't be 13 and 11. It couldn't be 13 Republicans and 11 Democrats. It also could be anything less than 12 and 12. It could be 6 and 6 or 8 and 8 or 10 and 10 and all the rest made up for by independent or third parties. What this bill says is that it cannot be overrepresented by the two major parties. It doesn't define the two major parties in case that ever changes. Of course, it's Republican and Democrat now. What this bill says is whatever the two largest parties are in the state, there will be equal representation within the pool and no more than half.
Follow up.
Is there any way we could make this applicable for the state of Texas as well?
If somebody else, I think this would be great reform in Texas. Uh-huh. Actually, I really do think this is model legislation, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Buckley. We would be the first state to adopt this, but this is certainly a standard, I think, that is. I mean, any time you can take the politics out of something that should be fair, I think, is a good thing. I once again, not to impugn, but I think we've all had these. Without naming names, there was a member of the Senate, the state Senate that I talked to, following I've known for years, and as currently a county commissioner, in a conversation with me suggested that he was specifically written out of certain congressional district that he had his eye on. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't think he knows that that's true or not. I think he believes in this core, and what I'm trying to do with this is completely remove that as a potential question.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Okay. Thank
Great.
You very
thank
much.
You, Madam Chair, very much.
Next, we'll call Kathy Eaton. Good morning, and we're on HJR 33.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Would you allow me the privilege of addressing both of them at the same time?
Sure, I think we can do that. We're in a public hearing right now on HJR 33, and I will also reopen the public hearing on HJR 31.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. What is being distributed to you now is a copy of our just hot off the press redistricting in Oregon, a study that we've been involved in for the past year, and upon which we have reached what we call member agreement, which means we have a position on it. And there is a letter also in your packet which reiterates what that position is. At this point, we're not taking any particular position on either HJR 31 or 33. And I gave you all of my copies of testimony. Could I have one back, please? Sorry about that. As you have heard before, the League is a grassroots, nonpartisan, political group which encourages citizen participation in government. We believe that it's very important to have a discussion right now about the redistricting that will take place in 2011 following the 2010 federal census. We think it's important to begin the discussion now because it's going to be harder to reform it if you move down to 9 and then certainly in 11. We had taken position on the critical elements that we believe should be considered during the redistricting process. We believe that the committee now has an excellent opportunity to seek background information about the current Oregon redistricting process and to investigate recommendations about possible revisions for the next redistricting. We have provided you with this copy of the League's publication, which reflects our research into Oregon law and practice regarding redistricting, as well as an analysis of what other states do and the outcomes of a variety of redistricting processes. Our basic philosophy is reflected in the opening statement of the position, and I'll quote, "Congressional and legislative redistricting should advance the fundamental purposes of representative democracy and a Republican form of government by affording the people a meaningful choice in electing their representatives and holding the government accountable to the people. The League of Women Voters believes that the Oregon legislative and congressional redistricting system should be efficient, adequately funded, based on well-defined criteria, subject to a reasonable and effective timetable, and have an open and public process." In our analyzing HJR 31, we raise the following questions. What is the rationale for allowing an entire year to pass, including a general election, before the new districting is implemented? And you heard, I believe, from Representative Hunt and Representative Barnhart why they felt this was important. We raise another question then as, if in fact the redistricting plan has been adopted but is not going into effect, you do have an interesting problem about who is running for what in that next election. And I think that's something you really need to take a look at. Would Representative Barnhart continue to represent when he's reelected in 2012, when in actuality a plan is going to in fact be in effect where he might represent another district? So I think that timetable and how you work that out is important. And then we ran across a federal deadline for when states are supposed to have their redistricting in order. I was a member of the commission, the public commission, which former Secretary of State Phil Kiesling put together. And so I've been interested in the fact that we have always had to have our plan done by December 31st of that even-numbered year by 2011, it would have to be in place rather than waiting. And so I think maybe you might want to check into what that actual federal date is, because we were complimented that year because we got it in by December 31st, and we were the one of only five states to do that. With regard to HJR 33, we have the following questions. Why would you amend the Oregon Constitution to renew any review by the Supreme Court? As most of the states that we reviewed in their process, the court has some role in reviewing the legality of the plan. And so we're concerned that it's totally taken out of the whole place. Why would we want to put all of this detail into the Oregon Constitution? It did not appear to be as simple as stated. League positions would suggest that an outline of the process should be put in the Constitution and the detail put into statute, where it can be adjusted as we would gain experience with the new process. Third question, in our research, we found problems with the current system. Does the proposed special master's panel make that system less complex or easier to implement? Redistricting is a political process. So should all political data be excluded from the process? The League study and position suggests that district competitiveness is an important criterion. Others have suggested that political data and considerations will inevitably leak into the process, and that it is better to have all of the data out in the open where everyone can consider it. Is the public involvement sufficient? It calls for three public hearings, HJR 33. There were 22 public hearings during the 2001 development of the redistricting plan. And finally, what is the rationale for submitting the plan for a public vote in either of those HJRs? Obviously, they amend the Constitution, but finally, why would you submit the plan itself for a public vote? We respectfully recommend that the committee issue a call for invited testimony to include as many persons as possible who have experience in the redistricting process. Such persons could include present and former secretaries of state and staff, former Supreme Court justices, and citizens who have been involved as consultants or hearing participants, among others. Redistricting is a very important democratic process, and we look forward to further discussions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I actually had meant to ask this of Representative Bruhn when he was here, but I wanted to ask you, we are apparently on track to get another seat in Congress if the population continues to
that
grow.
That appears to be that.
And
yeah, yes.
So I would assume any changes or new groups that were set up to deal with redistricting would also have to draw the lines for that new district?
Well, yes, because there would be a new congressional district, of course. Yes.
Questions? Okay. I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony.
We hope to see you again on this issue.
I'm sure we'll be seeing you again. I will close the public hearing on HJR 33 and close the public hearing on Well, before I do that, actually, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on HJR 33 or HJR 31?
No.
So I've already closed the public hearing on HJR 33, and I will close the public hearing on HJR 31. And I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3296. Mr. Stemridge.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, House Bill 3296 for legislative vacancies occurring within 1 year after election at which the legislator was elected requires that the vacancies be filled by special election. As you know, the vacancies are currently filled by appointment.
Okay. And it looks like we have some witnesses here to talk about this bill. How about Jim Gilbert and Patricia Ross? Would you both like to come forward? Yes, why don't you both come forward? You're both on the same side, so. Good morning, and welcome to the Elections Committee.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. As some of you know, I was a candidate for state representative in House District 18 in the 2006 election, and I'm going to testify today in favor of House Bill 3296. My name is Jim Gilbert. I live in Clackamas County between Malala and Canby. My opponent at that election was the incumbent Max Sumner, and in September 2006, he stated that he was being treated for lung cancer and also stated that his treatment was going well and that he would stay in the race. And in an interview with Peter Wong of the Statesman Journal on November 2nd, 2006, he said that his treatment for lung cancer will not deter him from winning and serving a second two-year term. He won the election on November 7th and on December 8th resigned his seat, which put in place the current method of filling a legislative vacancy. The Republic, as you and probably some of you may know this process, but the Republican Party then nominated five nominees for this seat, and that person, one person was selected on December 27, 2006 to fill his seat. I attended that meeting, and the process was interesting. It sort of was determined at the meeting itself how it was going to go, and each person I counted had a total of 19 minutes to speak. I thought, to me, it would be great to run for election and only have to campaign for 19 minutes. There was no opportunity for input or questions from the citizens that these new people were being asked to represent. And to me, this really seemed to be a very flawed and undemocratic process and denied the citizens of our district the opportunity to elect their state representative. It's a process that encourages a candidate to stay in the race despite their physical condition, so that the party they represent will maintain the seat regardless of the wishes of the electorate, of the qualifications of the replacement, and it really encourages deception and manipulation of the electoral process. As I understand, Oregon's current system of filling vacancies dates from the 1950s, and I believe it's time that we join the other 25 states that have a special election to fill legislative vacancies. And there's an attachment to my testimony which shows the 25 states that currently do have special elections, including California. I think it's really important that candidates appear before the citizens they wish to represent, and that the voters have the opportunity to decide who should represent them. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Patricia Ross, and I live at 31728 Shady Dell Road in Malala. I support this legislative measure, 3296, speaking from my own experience. During the last general election for District 18 House of Representatives in the state of Oregon, I voted for a candidate that I thought was the best person for representing me as a citizen and elector. Even though he was not of my political party, I liked the manner in which he would not accept out-of-state and special interest contributions. My candidate lost, but the people spoke, and I accepted the vote. But when I found out that the winning candidate resigned just 1 month after the election, and that he knew that he was seriously ill with cancer before the election, I and my friends and neighbors could not understand why he did not resign earlier. But then we were unaware of the current law that the county commissioners would appoint a replacement representative who would have to be of the same political party. When we found out about the current law, we understood why he did not resign earlier. We all felt that this was not a democratic way to replace our resigned representative. We would be getting a representative that need have no loyalty to the voters, only to his political party and to those special interest contributors. Apparently, a lot of people felt the same way as I did, as there was standing room only at the appointment meeting. I have nothing against the person selected, only the manner in which he was appointed. I did not vote for my county commissioners so they could appoint my representative to the Oregon House of Representatives. When the above happened, I determined that ORS 171-051 needed to be changed to ensure my rights under the Bill of Rights. Fortunately, other people beside myself were concerned, and gratefully, HB 3296 came into being. Abraham Lincoln best described democracy as government of the people, by the people, and for the people. For that government to be by the people, however, requires that the people decide who shall be their leaders. Without free and fair elections, there can be no democratic society, and without that constant accountability of government officials to the electorate, there can, in fact, be no assurance of any other rights. The right to vote, therefore, is not only an important individual liberty, it is also a foundation stone of free government. We, the people of Oregon, need this change to ensure that our long-term senators and representatives in our state legislature are elected by the electors and only by the electors. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really a question for either of you. The bill as it's currently drafted would require a special election only if the vacancy occurred within the first year after the person had been elected. Can we talk about if you think that is the right criteria to utilize or not?
Chair Rosenbaum and Representative Hunt, what I understand is for a state senator, there is an election that will happen if there's two, since they serve for 4 years, then there's an election process that happens for the second of those two years. It seems to be unwieldy to try to have an election with only just a few weeks left, say, for example, of a term, if someone's not in there. But I'm not sure how other states do that, if they do have elections, if they have another process that they use that will have an election. At what point do they say, well, we're not going to have an election anymore, and then perhaps not do, just wait until the next general election? But this is certainly a much better process than the one we have now.
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Maybe just a comment or an observation, but I know what you're getting at, but it seems to me that in your instance, you would have campaigned for quite a while, and then having another special, it seems like you would really have a leg up compared to a new Republican candidate going into the race. I don't know. How would you? I guess you couldn't overcome that necessarily. I don't know. It's just an observation. I don't know if there's any response necessary on that.
Well, Chair Rosenbaum and Representative Thatcher, I certainly understand what you're saying, and I think the opportunity for at least the electors to elect someone, if you're out there campaigning and people get to meet you and understand your views, it's a much more democratic process than having six county commissioners choose someone based on 19 minutes of discussion. So it may not be the perfect solution, but I think it definitely gives the people more of a voice in who's going to be their representative.
And it would seem that one of the big changes is that under the current system, whoever fills the vacancy has to be of the same political party.
Yes.
And this would not, and that would change under this new proposal, right?
Yes.
Other questions? Okay. Sounds like you've answered them all. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
And those are all the people that signed up to testify on House Bill 32. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we do have another witness, Joan Zuber. Please come forward. Good morning, and welcome to the Elections Committee.
Thank you. My name is Joan Zuber. I live at 44731 South Elk Prairie Road, Molalla, Oregon. I wanted to comment on this bill because last week I attended a town meeting in which our new representative and our senator and a representative from Darlene Hooley's office took questions from the people who attended the meeting. And frankly, I'm here because I was disappointed. It's my first time to hear our representative answer some questions. And I felt as though he was really took something on that as taking that position that he was, I felt, unprepared for. And he was struggling. Oftentimes, there have been elections for state senate or representative in which there's only one person who actually runs. They run unopposed. If something were to happen where they resigned, it's possible there would only be a person from one party who would, run for that position, but at least people would have a chance to hear what they had to say and to vote for them accordingly. And I feel as though it was strictly partisan, which, of course, is hard to avoid, in the state legislature. But I felt that he was looking to people within his party for guidance to form his opinions rather than, from his experience. And I personally just felt disappointed. I felt as though I am not represented in this decision. And so that's why I came down to encourage you to pass something that would make it a fair process so that the people within the district can at least have a say and a vote on who the next person is. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thanks very much. And we have another witness, Wayne Baum. Wayne, please come forward. Morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairwoman, Commissioner, Representatives. I wasn't going to testify, assuming that most of the points would be covered by some of the other witnesses. But there was one aspect of this issue that I don't think has been adequately covered, and that is the extreme partisanship of the selection process itself. We already understand that.
Actually, these microphones are very sensitive, so you don't need to.
Okay.
Get so close.
Back, actually.
We already understand that the system can be gamed in terms of the initial effect that an incumbent can decide to stay in office and then resign and preserve the seat for the party. However, the other aspect of it is the selection process itself. When a person resigns, it falls on the precinct committee persons of the party of the person resigning to choose a slate of potential candidates, and that slate is then submitted to the county commissioners for final selection. In that process, the precinct committee people have to consider the party affiliation of the county commissioners, and that can determine who they put on their slate. For example, if the county commissioners are of the same party, majority party, as the resigning member, then there's no problem. You find the strongest members of that party to put on that list. But what happens when the county commissioner's party is not of the same affiliation as the incumbent person being replaced? Then you have the problem of trying to figure out who the county commissioners are going to perceive as the person to choose. And because of the partisan nature of the situation, they're not necessarily going to pick the best person if they're of a different party. And then there's the issue of, and I think that was the case here in Max Lemmer, where you have two counties involved. It's possible that the county commissioners can't agree on a final selection, and it would fall on the governor. And the governor, in turn, again, you have a party situation where the governor, if he's the final, he or she is has to make the choice. What do you do if the governor is of a different party? And what all of this comes down to saying is that the system is being gamed at all of these different levels. It disenfranchises the voter, basically. And all the other points that were made about the process that we have currently, I feel, speaks for changing the system. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thanks very much for your testimony. And we have one more witness, Richard Matthews. Morning.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Richard Matthews. I live at 44002 South Elk Prairie Road, located between Table Rock and Silverton, Silver Creek Falls. So I'm way out there, but I'm right on the edge of Clackamas County. I'm testifying today in support of HB 3296, and I'm coming from another different representation. I'm an independent voter. I don't have a party affiliation. I've met Max Sumner. I have a great deal of respect for him. I've worked with him in some informative ways, and I enjoy the process in that way. I sure appreciate and hope that that he does well in his recovery. One of the groups of people are the independent voters who are not represented in this process. The voters who are independents are the third leg of this representative constituent base. And in this process, the third leg has no voice. And I really would like you to consider that, because as representative government, we really need to get everybody in the process. And I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thanks very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 3296? Seeing no one?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I wanted to point out that the information that we got from National Conference of State Legislatures, I don't think it's accurate. I might be wrong, but it according to this, it says that political parties appoint for filling legislative vacancies in Oregon, and the process, as has been testified here to by everyone who's talked about it, the political parties nominate a slate, and then the Board of County Commissioners appoint. So Oregon really should be listed in the second group with a little number one, what do you call that, super note
Right, that's a good point. I noticed that, too, and in fact, we probably should let them know that that wasn't accurate so that they can correct it. So thanks for pointing that out. Anything else? Okay, seeing nothing further to come before us, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3296. And members, we are adjourned.